Chapter 17. Saturday, 10:41 p.m. Melissa's footsteps echoed in the empty house. She was exhausted but couldn't sit still long enough to fall asleep. Her sister had arrived from Philadelphia, cooked them and the sheriff's deputies a huge meal, picked a fight about Melissa not eating, and then retired to the guest room while Melissa prowled the house, trying hard not to think. Finally, Melissa ended up in Ashley's room. Blissfully alone. It felt good after a day where strangers had dogged her every movement, where she had to play a role for the cameras and reporters, where her emotions repeatedly swamped her, dragging her down until she had nothing left. She didn't turn the lights on. The bed sprawled, a ghostly white square in the middle of the room, naked. The police had taken the sheets and covers. For what, Melissa did not want to dwell on. They had left Ashley's pillows. Melissa climbed onto the barren bed. The air conditioner cycled on, startling her with its chilly breath. She curled up into a fetal position. She had no one else to hug, so she hugged herself, burrowing into the pillows, trying to escape. The faint sound of a phone ringing propelled her from unconsciousness. It was all a dream, was her first thought as her hand shot out, searching through empty air for the phone. It wasn't there. She rolled over, eyes open now, realizing where she was, in Ashley's room, on Ashley's bed, alone. It wasn't a dream. The phone rang again, and her heart slammed into her throat as she leapt from the bed. How many times had it rung already? She ran down the hall to her room, her bare feet drumming against the hard wood in a frantic, primal rhythm. "Don't hang up!" she called out, even though she knew the sheriff's people wouldn't let that happen. She lunged across her bed, snatching the receiver. "Hello!" At first, there was only silence. Melissa's chest heaved with adrenaline, her heart pounding so hard she couldn't swallow. "Hello, Ashley. Is that you?" Her voice was sandpapery with unshed tears. "Speak to me. Ashley, where are you?" More silence. Melissa's hand clenched the phone so tightly her fingers went numb. So did her lips and toes. During those few seconds, her entire body became one impenetrable block of ice. "We know your secret." A taunting, sing-song voice that wasn't Ashley's jolted through the air. She leaned forward, elbows between her knees, fighting nausea. "Where's my daughter?" She couldn't feel her tears against the frozen tundra of her face, but she saw them as they splashed her robe, small, irregular, dark splotches on the shiny silver fabric. "Please let me talk with her. I beg you. Please." Laughter was her only answer.
"Allegheny County is relaying a call. It's coming from the kid's phone."
Burroughs poked his head in from the bullpen as Lucy was talking to Ashley's English teacher. "I'll have to get back to you, Mrs. Forrester." Lucy hung up and rushed out to where everyone gathered around Taylor Station.
"Where's my daughter?"
Melissa Yeager's voice shrieked through the speakers.
"We know your secret," came a man's whisper, followed by the sound of laughter, then the click of a receiver being hung up.
"Too short to trace, but if they don't turn the phone off, we can get the GPS," Taylor announced to everyone.
He touched his Bluetooth earset.
"I got it, thanks."
His fingers tapped methodically on his keyboard for a moment before he swiveled to face the H-Tech team.
"Okay, guys, we've got the file. I want the voice analysis and background noise dissected like yesterday."
The computer guys broke up into smaller groups, chattering eagerly. A chance to get in on a real-life, real-time possible kidnapping was more exciting than playing with internet porn.
"Play it back for me," Lucy asked Taylor.
"Burroughs, you get on the horn with Verizon, and you don't hang up until they have coordinates for us.
Walden, reach out to the mom. Tell her we're working on it. We'll let her know as soon. You know the drill."
Before she could say more, Melissa's voice filled the air once more, sounding tissue-thin, shredded. A computer screen filled with jagged waves as she spoke. The entire conversation lasted only 38 seconds.
"Sounds like a man," Taylor said.
"Play the laugh again," she directed. They both listened to the final seconds of the call.
"That was more than one person. At least two, and one of them sounds like a woman."
"She's right, Taylor," one of the H-Tech volunteers called out from a nearby desk, one ear covered with a headphone.
"Two people, a man and a woman. Stress analysis indicates possible intoxication."
Taylor grinned up at Lucy.
"Wouldn't that be great? She's out getting high with her boyfriend, no worries. As soon as we nail down the GPS, we'll have her home safe and sound.
Except for the fact of the dead waitress lying on a slab in the ME's morgue." But Lucy didn't dampen his enthusiasm.
"Room the call originated from is approximately 16 by 22 feet. Wood floors, 12-foot high ceilings, several large windows along one wall," another tech called out.
Lucy didn't ask how they figured that out. At this point, she didn't really care if it was science or magic. Burroughs nodded to her from where he stood on the side of the room, away from the loudest of the chaos. He was writing something down, then hung up his phone.
"Got it. The cells narrowed it to either 5514 or 5516 Broad Street. That's in Garfield."
"Garfield? Whose jurisdiction?" Lucy asked. Taylor popped a map of Pittsburgh on the large monitor in the front of the room, a flashing red square marking their quarry.
"Mine," Burroughs said with a satisfied grin.
"Call for a warrant," she told Walden as he rejoined them.
"Burroughs, contact your SWAT team. Tell them I might need them within the hour. Taylor, I want to know everything about every person at those addresses. Names, criminal records, what they ate for breakfast. Call me with the results. Let's move."
"LT, I can do that in the car," Taylor protested, reminding Lucy of Megan.
"Can't I come? You might need me."
When he turned those puppy dog brown eyes on her, it was hard to remember Taylor was only 3 years younger than she was. But he had a point. He wasn't tech support anymore. He was a full-fledged agent.
"All right. Ride with Walden."
Walden followed her into her office where she donned her Kevlar.
"Got the warrant."
He closed the door and leaned against it. She still hadn't figured out why the door was solid wood when the walls around it were glass, but decided it was a good thing if you were going to have 200-plus-pound guys like Walden leaning against it.
"What's the problem?"
she asked, adjusting the Velcro straps and shifting her shoulders under the weight of the bulletproof vest.
"Aren't you moving kind of fast on this? Let the locals set up surveillance, lock down the block. We wait until morning, we can have it narrowed down to an exact location, get reconnaissance, maybe even get a helo up. More planning time, more backup, better chance of everyone getting home in one piece."
Lucy smiled. It was the most polite insubordination she'd ever experienced. He was right. It was by the book, the way things were meant to be done at the Bureau.
"Burroughs told me a joke while we were riding together today," she said.
"How many Phoebes does it take to change a light bulb?" Walden came close to glaring at her, then played along.
"How many?"
"All of them. 10,000 to study the problem, 2,600 to fill out forms in triplicate and wait for approval, 17 to monitor from a safe distance, and one agent to go undercover and bribe a confidential informant to climb the ladder and do the dirty work." He shrugged, palms up, hands empty.
"Your point being?"
"You've been working this case all day. You think that was Ashley and her boyfriend getting high, calling Mommy Dearest to gloat?" His face went blank, but behind his eyes, a battle was being waged.
"We don't have any evidence she's in immediate danger. Standard procedure."
Lucy leaned forward, hands slapping her desk.
Technically, Walden was her second in command. It was his job to point out any potential flaws in her thinking.
But she also needed to know where he stood, how he was thinking. Not just what the rulebook said he should be telling her.
"If it was your case, your call, what would you do?" she asked,
keeping her face non-judgmental, meeting his gaze head on. There was a long pause, longer than it would take either of them to recite the appropriate sections of the FBI's op manual. Finally, Walden came closest to a genuine smile she'd seen yet from the man. His lips parted wide enough that she could actually see his top teeth as his lips curled upwards. For a second, maybe even two, I'd go in hard and fast, ready for anything. I wouldn't wait. She cleared her Glock, checked the magazine, and reloaded it after chambering around. My feelings exactly. Any problems riding with the kid? He gave a small shake of his head. Nah, he just likes to talk a lot is all. Unless you want to keep an eye on him. It is his first real deployment. She thought of that. Taylor was wound tighter than a meth tweaker, but that seemed to be his nature. He'll do fine. He nodded and stepped toward the door, then turned back. You sure? It'd give Burroughs a chance to feast his eyes on a fine piece of big black man's ass. She snapped her head up at that. What are you implying, Special Agent Walden? All evidence of his smile vanished at her tone. She strode around the desk to stand beside him. Surely you don't mean that your ass is better looking than mine. A rumbly chuckle escaped him as she craned her head to look over her shoulder at first her rear, then his. No, ma'am. Never. All right, then. She leaned against the conference table and looked out the glass walls to where Burroughs was talking on the phone, lounging in Walden's chair as if he owned the place. I appreciate the offer, but it's not a problem I choose to address, at least not at this time. He mimicked her position, also staring at Burroughs, his face falling back into its usual expressionless mask. Can I ask why? First of all, for guys like Burroughs, nothing I say or do will change them. It's in their DNA. Second of all, it's not my job to try to change him. It's my job to find Ashley. So I let Burroughs look all he wants. Who cares? As long as I get what I want. The half-hidden smile crept back. You're using him. Well, duh. You heard Burroughs. It's his turf. If I stick next to him, I can maybe keep things from escalating if he takes it in mine to grandstand. And, she holstered her weapon, if things do get hot and heavy, I can use him to direct the SWAT guys. I'm sure they wouldn't cotton to taking orders directly from a Phoebe. I like how you think, boss. The almost smile became a real-life, actual smile. Walden gave her a mock salute and left to gather his own tactical gear. Lucy grinned as she grabbed her windbreaker. Nicest thing anyone had said to her all day. Even nicer was the prospect that maybe she was wrong about all this. Maybe Ashley had left just to spite Mama Bear and Papa Bear and was waiting for them in Garfield, toked up and full of life. Her gut told her otherwise, but it never hurt to hope.